Okay, folks, I am Rao Kambhampati, and Huan Lu is having fun in Hong Kong. And so you are unfortunate, and I'm unfortunate. So both here. We are not in Hong Kong. The other thing I should tell you is I've been here for 18 years, and I never taught two classes back to back. And I just taught my class, and I came here. And I use teaching as my exercise, so right now I really like to sleep. So if you sleep, then I will join you and we'll all sleep. We'll see how far it goes. I guess the good part, of course, is, you know, when I teach my classes, I have to worry about actually making tests and making sure that you understood and all this fun stuff. And it's like what they say about grandparents bringing up your kids, right? I mean, they can spoil the heck out of the kids. And that's what I hope to do here. I spoil you, and then I don't have to set the exams. I don't have to grade it. And, you know, I guess Huan Lu and, you know, and whoever is the TA is going to deal with it. Okay? So let's see if we can have some fun. I'm going to talk about planning, which is sort of a self-contained topic. That's the way we wanted it, so that, you know, when he comes back, he will do whatever it is that he was doing beforehand. So I will just, I think, give two lectures today and Wednesday. Okay. So what is planning, and why do we care about it? So this is my robot picture. You have yours, I'm sure. And the whole point of AI is there is a cute robot which is looking at the environment and has just one question, only one question: what action do I do next? That's all. Okay? And everything else is details. All the stuff that you've been wasting your time on is supposedly to help you figure out what to do next. Okay? So since I have to figure out what action to do next, if I would like to think about what it is that I'm going to do before doing it, then I'm doing planning. That's almost the definition of planning, even by what you would use from normal, you know, English or the natural language usage. Okay, so in terms of trying to figure out what action to do next, it turns out that complexity of solving that problem depends on a bunch of things, as you learned from, like I said in the earlier chapter. For example, it depends on whether or not the environment is static or dynamic. It depends on whether or not it's observable or partially observable. It depends on whether, in fact, this and this are connected, you know, whether the environment is observable or partially observable, and whether I have perfect perception or imperfect perception. So in fact, the environment could be very fully observable, but I don't have eyes, so it becomes partially observable or unobservable for me. Okay, but sometimes you can differentiate that in terms of, you know, the environment accessibility. Is it deterministic or stochastic? And in between deterministic and stochastic is, there was one more thing that you guys must have talked about: non-deterministic. What's the difference between stochastic and non-deterministic? Which is better for your life? First of all, I assume that you all like yellow, right? All the yellow ones are easy. Life. Static worlds are easy to deal with. They're kind of uninteresting, but they're easy to deal with. Fully observable worlds are easy to deal with. Deterministic worlds are easy to deal with. If you have perfect sensing, you can have more easy time in life. And then, of course, there are a couple of other things I'm throwing in which you didn't talk about in the second chapter two, I guess, agent chapter. One is, does the agent have categorical goals? They must all be satisfied or nothing at all, okay, versus partial satisfaction. Satisfy as much of the goals as possible, okay? So this is something that, you know, that you may not have thought about. I threw it in. And then deterministic versus stochastic. In the case of deterministic versus stochastic, actually, there is a non-deterministic case. I assume that you like deterministic world to live in. Would you prefer non-deterministic or stochastic worlds? And what's the difference?
The difference is non-determinism, that they try every possibility and stick with one. Like, they try every possibility at the same time?
No, it's about how the world evolves. Okay, first of all, what is this thing telling us? Deterministic means when I do an action, I know exactly the single state that this action will take me to. So if I know exactly what state I am in, and I do this action, I know exactly what state I would be in afterwards. Now, whether or not I'll know which state I am in depends on whether I have full perception and observability. But let's assume those problems are solved. I know exactly which state I am in. And if I do an action, I still may not know where I'm going to be if the action is not deterministic. If it is deterministic, I know the single state that would be true right after this action. So obviously that would be useful because you can simulate in your life world, you know, what else? If I do this action, yes, this state will happen. Then that state, I do this action, one more state will happen, and so on. Okay. Now, what's the difference between non-deterministic and stochastic in from that point of view? Non-deterministic means I do an action, a bunch of states can happen. Stochastic means I do an action, a bunch of states can happen, and what?
Random.
Yes, random meaning what? Again, that's true for non-deterministic too. So here, I take a coin, you know, and you have no reason to trust me. You never saw me before, right? I take a coin. I'm about to toss it. When I toss it, what do you think is going to happen? You know, it's going to either come heads or tails. Of course, the world can end too, but let's hope just heads or tails. What is going to happen when? Is heads going to happen 50% of the times and tails happen 50% of the times or not?
Roughly, yes.
Why roughly? Why do you think? I have this magic coin in my pocket. You never trusted me. You never knew me. So I came up with a coin which actually might be 0.8 heads, 0.2 tails. Okay? So if you don't know me, you have no clue. In fact, this is how you lose in Las Vegas. Because you think all these Las Vegas people are our friends, and you think, oh, there is an obvious, reasonable, random distribution behind what they're doing. It's just you don't know what a distribution is. So as far as you're concerned, the distribution is not known, so it's non-deterministic. Non-deterministic means not only do you know that many states can happen, but you don't know which is more likely than which. Everything is equally, you have no idea about likelihood. On the other hand, stochastic means you have extra information. You know it will happen 80% of the time, it happened 20% of the time. Okay? So stochastic is better or worse than non-deterministic? Better. Okay, but what is better for you is not what the world will give you. When you came into this world, it's basically non-deterministic for you because you have no idea if you do this action what the heck is going to happen. And then after a while, you hopefully figured out the probability, so it becomes stochastic. And after a while, you made the world stabilize so that it actually becomes deterministic. When you do this action, only a certain thing will happen. Okay, so one of the nice things about humans is if I give you a problem, you change the problem. We don't have to be stuck with the bad worlds we are born into. We can change them. And so since we like deterministic, we'll make the world more and more deterministic, if possible. Since we like stochastic, even if we are in non-deterministic worlds, we'll make them stochastic by learning the distribution. Okay, so that's just one example. Now, what about full versus partial satisfaction? Which is a easier problem to solve? Full satisfaction means here are the goals, you must handle all of them. Partial satisfaction means here are all the goals, you know, do your best. Which is better for you? I'm the boss and you know I'm deciding your grade.
Oh.
What?
Partial.
That guy is wise and you on the other hand are worried. Okay. Because if your boss ever says here are a whole bunch of things, take your time and do whatever you can, and you actually take off for Las Vegas, you lose your job. Right? Partial satisfaction is harder because there is, in a complete satisfaction, at least you know whether or not the problem can be solved sometimes. So for example, here are my goals. You be here, at the same time you also be at your home. And you look at me, look at yourself and say, no, I'm sorry, for the kind of agent I am, it's impossible. So I give up right away. Okay? You can actually prove that problems can't be done sometimes. Partial satisfaction, on the other hand, you can always do nothing, but that's just a bad solution. And how much better can you do? How many of you are PhD students here? Okay. How many of you are in the ABD situation, all but dissertation? Which I guess if you're taking this course, you haven't yet got to that. So the problem between PhD and undergraduate, what do you think is the harder? PhD students have it easy. They're just told, you know, all you need to do is good thesis. You know, take your time, you know, enjoy, this guy is enjoying, and you know, but at the end, man, if you don't do a good thesis, we're going to hit you on the head. Whereas for you guys, we tell you, you know, week one, this is the homework. Week two, this is the homework. Week three, this is the homework. I structure the heck out of your life. Which do you think is nicer? When you are undergraduate, you think, my God, those grad students have it easy, right? Because it's all partial satisfaction for them. They can do whatever they feel like. Well, if you don't actually get the thesis, they'll be out on the street. They're already out on the street, you know, but they'll be even more out on the street. Whereas for you guys, because I structured the world and I told you, you have to satisfy these goals exactly at these points of time, you know at least when to drop the class. I mean, not to, you know, work on this poor guy. He may wait until 5 years and find, oh my God, I should have dropped out of PhD program and like in the first week. Whereas you guys, at least the rest of you undergrads, will at least know after the midterm, maybe it's a good idea to get drop out of this course. Okay? So again, be wary, be careful about what you wish for. You know, partial satisfaction looks like an easy problem, but in fact, full satisfaction is a better problem because somebody else did the thinking for you. Okay, anyway, so much for that picture. So, you know, obviously the yellows are easy, the reds are hard, there can be, you know, spectrums, etc. And I just need to figure out, given a domain model and my sensing, etc., what is the next action to do? Okay, now obviously the difficulty of figuring out what is the next action to do is going to depend upon whether I'm in yellows or reds. And so being a good computer scientist, I become yellow. I say, I'll do the easy case first, okay? So I'll assume the world is static. That means when I'm thinking, the world comes to a screeching standstill, okay? I'll assume it's fully observable. I know exactly what the state is. Whenever I feel like I can look at the state, I know what exactly the state of the world is. I assume instantaneous actions. I'll assume deterministic actions. I assume full satisfaction. That means the goal must be reached. If I get to the goal, I get the goal reward, otherwise I won't get anything. Okay? And I'll also assume full perception, so both together. That's the easiest case. That would be called deterministic planning. I would be mostly talking to you about deterministic planning. Okay. Now, the question then that you should ask me is, how many of you have done A-star search based project in the beginning of the semester? What's your project? I have no clue what you guys did.
Traveling salesman.
What?
Traveling salesman.
Traveling salesman. Okay. So is traveling salesman a planning problem? Yes. So why the heck am I wasting your time? You're already done with planning, right? You've done a project on planning. Why am I wasting your time? I'm basically using a bluer slide compared to, you know, I know that Juan Lu only uses white and black and I use blue, right? So it's different color, but other than that, why the heck am I wasting your time? That you need to understand. You need to understand why, for example, there is a separate chapter for planning as against search. Okay? And in fact, this is one part that wasn't made very clear in the current edition of the textbook. It will be made clear in the next edition. But let's actually talk about it. The interesting point is that the problem-solving agent that you guys have looked at, it assumes atomic representation. What's an atomic representation? A state is an atom. It has no structure. State number S15. Okay? An action is basically an opaque piece of code which takes a node, gives children. That's how you implemented your A-star search, right? So the A-star search algorithm had no clue as to what it is doing. You know, functions are coming in, functions are going out. If the same A-star search can be working on, you know, traveling salesperson or some other thing, which is great because it's, you know, problem independent. But what's bad is it doesn't know that there is any structure to the state that it is looking at. As far as it's concerned, the states are atomic, okay? Now, what we will do in AI, in fact, I mean, you have looked at this, you can talk about different levels of expressiveness of representations. Atomic is the lowest. It's sort of the assembly language of AI, okay? And assembly language metaphor, we will carry it more often in this class, okay? So atomic is the lowest, and state-based search, for example, is atomic. And before you can say you know how to solve a problem, you should at least know how to do it in the atomic representation. If you say, I know how to do the diagnosis, make sure you at least know how to do it in atomic representation. If you want to say you know how to do planning, make sure you know it in atomic representation. I'm here to tell you, you already know how to do planning in atomic representation. That's A-star search and problem solving agent. Okay, so whatever I tell you has to be different from that. And the reason it's different is, in fact, there are other representations. Apart from atomic, you can have propositional representation. This is the reason why, after problem-solving agent, which looks at atomic representations, you looked at propositional agents. I hope you did, you know, propositional logic. Right? What was propositional logic doing? It essentially assumed that a state is no longer S45, whose innards are completely opaque to us. It actually said, well, the state S45 is actually defined in terms of PQRS. So is another state S49. That too is defined in terms of PQRS. In my domain, PQRS are the state variables with respect to which I define my state. Okay, it's a very simple assumption. In fact, you know, for many times you may have thought about state variable models for the world. You know, if you're a control theory person, you have thought about state variable models. In fact, you should have been feeling bad that after all the things that you already know, we were only doing atomic models in search. Okay. So you have state variable models, PQRS, and the advantage of it is what? If you have n state variables, you can, in essence, talk about 2 power n states. So it's a compact representation of the state space. If you have n state variables, you can talk about 2 power n distinct states. Okay? That's the propositional R, and it's also called factored representation. Okay? On top of that, you can talk about relational representation. So here you thought states are atoms. Here you thought states are made up of state variables. Relational representation, you say, actually the world is made up of objects with properties and relations between them. Okay? And then on top of that is first order. Okay? Where, you know, relational models, for example, actually turns out one of the interesting things is if I have a propositional model, I can compile it down into atomic model. Yes? I did have this, but if I don't like, you know, propositions, and I already have made my A star search code for the first project, and I don't want to waste my time listening to me, right? So what I would do is I'll take, okay, give me your state variable representation. I'll just compile it down to my assembly language, which is atomic states. And I will do search in that space. Okay, that's the compilation trick. So everything on top can be compiled down to bottom. Almost, right? So you can compile down propositional to atomic. You can compile down relational to propositional and so to atomic. The only thing that you cannot do is compile down first order. Right, you guys remember that, right? First order cannot be compiled down into a finite compilation. So imagine giving a high-level language, you know, called C++, where you write a program and the size of the assembly code that is developed is infinitely large. That wouldn't be good. Intel won't be happy, right? And so essentially, the moment you have function names, the moment you have functions, you essentially have infinite number of objects in your world. And so a first order theory cannot be compiled down into a finite propositional theory, and so it cannot be compiled down into a finite atomic theory. It cannot be compiled down to a finite relational or propositional, and so not atomic. Okay, so this is stuff that you already know. What I want you to focus on is this stuff. Okay, as you go through, this is the chronology I used in 471 that I most recently taught. Okay, you use, like, you know, you talk about various topics. The question that you can ask is, how are these topics stacking up in this y-axis? Okay, so in my case, I did state space search, which is at the atomic level. Okay, and then in the textbook, for example, there is CSP, constraint satisfaction problems. Those are at the propositional level. Okay, then you can do propositional logic. That is also at the propositional level. Then you do Bayes net. That's also at the propositional level. Then you do first order logic without functions. That's at the relational level. Then you do first order logic with functions, and in particular situation calculus. That would be at the first order level. That's the highest level. And then I talked about strips planning, and I'm going to talk to you about strips planning today. And that will actually be at the sort of relational and propositional level. And then there is a 17, chapter 17 in the book called Markov Decision Processes, which is a beautiful model. It's basically atomic search model where you have partial satisfaction and you have stochastic dynamics. So essentially, you know, I live in a world which has a bunch of, let's say, if I am in a grid, let's say, you know, think about an MDP problem. You guys didn't do MDP, right? Okay. So, you know, think about a grid, let's say. And then here is where sort of I want to get to. So if I get here, I'll get like 2 points, 2.0 points. Okay? And there are some, you know, bad guys like Wampus, etc. Here, if I get here, I'll get minus 5 points. Okay? And then if I'm dilly-dallying, I will be getting, you know, minus 0.04 points. Just because I'm wasting my time. Like your parents saying, you know, do something useful. Okay, so that you won't take forever not doing anything. Okay? So this is basically called the reward model for this Markov decision process. Okay? And then you can go up, down, I mean or left or right or up and down, right? And to make it stochastic, I'll say when I go up, I will go up 0.8 of the time and go left 0.1 of the time, right 0.1 of the time. That would make it stochastic. So if I give you a problem like that, that's the kind of problem that you have, your robots have. Okay, robots don't say, are not given a specific goal to satisfy. You have a bunch of things to do. Don't get into trouble, do useful stuff, and don't fall into ditches. And how is it, what is the solution there? It cannot be formalized in terms of the state search that you have talked about until now. For example, A star search won't work. It turns out you need a much better idea, a more sophisticated idea called optimal policy, which is whichever state you find yourself in, what is the optimal action to do there? And it turns out this kind of a problem is a special case, I mean, is a more general case with state space search that you did earlier being a special case. Right? Now, which is, it's, you know, strong enough that they waited until the 17th chapter to talk about it. You would think that the textbook is sort of monotonically increasing this way, right? Because this is supposed to be the better thing to do. Except by the time you came to MDPs, you are actually back smack dab in the atomic level. Okay? And then if you, for example, did you do game trees? Min-max search? Okay? If you do min-max search, you mostly would have done it again in the state atomic model. Okay? So again, that is done in the atomic model. And then when you came to decision trees, did you do decision trees? That's done at the propositional level. So what the heck is going on? You're going up and down and up and down. Is there something about MDPs that you should only be doing it at the atomic level? Are there certain tasks that should only be done at the atomic level? Or is there some sort of an evolution for AI tasks such that they're all supposed to go from atomic to first order? What do you guys think? By the way, those of you who are feeling sleepy, please feel free to leave, okay? I understand that it's okay, but I have problems dealing with sleep. No, because I might fall asleep right now. Go ahead. Anybody has any idea on what was my question? What was my question? Yes. Is there any, do you think that everything should be at like the first order level? Or is it that some tasks are just supposed to be at the atomic level anyway? There are two possible ways of looking at the state of the art. You know, you are computer science senior and first year graduate students, right? So you get the snapshot of a field in transition, right? Now the question is, where do you think this field is going to go? Is it all going to fuddle down to atomic level? Or is everything trying to go become first order? And if the latter, then it must be the case that if you're doing something here, it must be because you don't yet know how to do it at a higher level. So which is the right one? Yes, but implementation, yes, okay. But imagine, remember that if you are a small agent with a small brain, small memory, okay, to deal with a large world which has 2^10 states, you need 2^10, if you're doing it in atomic level, you need 2^10 size memory. Whereas I can say for all X, you know, father XY means child YX. And that's like an infinitely large set of statements I just made there. Okay? So Again, remember this distinction between if you are in 310 and you are talking about, you have a chance to either write something with binary trees or height balanced trees. Which is easier for you?
Binary trees.
Binary trees. Which is good for the world? Height balanced trees. So you bite the bullet very hard and try to learn how to do height balanced trees, which are very much more painful than binary trees. Okay? The same thing in AI. You understand everything in the atomic level. You do teach binary trees first before you get to height balanced trees. But the assumption is height balanced trees are much better idea. Okay, and similarly, I will teach everything to you in atomic level first. If you don't understand it in atomic level, you don't understand it at all. But you want to go higher up. Why? Why should I go higher up? Why is it useful to do things at, for example, propositional level instead of atomic level? Yes, sir.
Because AI is so complicated that it needs to extract more to be able to do useful things.
Yeah, it's not so much that we are abstracting here, it's actually compacting. Well, there is a level of abstraction, but you can compile it down. So it's like, for example, if you think about propositional versus atomic, right, it's completely like, should you be writing programs in C or assembly? What would Intel boss tell you? They will tell you, we all, you know, Intel boss, are you an Intel boss? Now, if you are like, you know, boss of, in, you know, some, your company, right, who already paid for your time, right, and all they care about is efficiency. Let's just get the maximum efficiency possible. Okay?
Out of you or the programmer?
What?
Out of you, the programmer, or out of the application you're writing?
After the application.
Gotcha.
That's all they care about. You know, bosses don't care about our lives. I mean, you may have a good boss, okay? But most of the time, if bosses cared about our life, you know, there was this old T-shirt I saw once, which said, 25 years of research into programming languages, and C++ is the result? Question mark. Okay? C++ isn't exactly the greatest language, and yet everybody uses it. Okay? So obviously, what language you use doesn't depend on what's good for you. It depends on what's good for your boss and your company. Okay, so if you're in Intel, they would much rather just make you do everything in assembly because in the end they're going to do it in assembly anyway. Why do you want to write it in, you know, Lisp or C or something else? Because it's easier to write, because it's more compact, because it's easier to find errors in your code, and in fact many a time because it's actually inference is easier. Okay, so inference is easier at higher level. So for example, if I give you a big piece of assembly language code and say, there is a problem with this, can you figure this out? Right? As again as, here is a piece of Python code, there is a problem with this, can you figure this out? That's inference. Figuring out whether or not there is a problem with the program is inference. Right? So keep that in mind, and the reason you want to go to higher levels of expressiveness is essentially because of those reasons. It's compact, it's faster to do inference on, and furthermore, in the case of AI, right, the model that you have, the atomic model that you have, let's say you have been told, I think you did traveling salesperson problem, many of the people would do, let's say, the 8 puzzle problem, right? If you're a kid, you came into this world, I say, do the 8 puzzle problem. You have no clue what the heck is 8 puzzle problem. You're supposed to learn the model for the 8 puzzle problem. So for example, if you're a kid and you're trying to play chess because other people are playing chess, you'll make all kinds of crazy moves, they'll keep laughing at you, and if you're one of those kids with high self-esteem, then you will continue working with it until you learn chess. Okay? So one of the things that AI cares about is how do you learn the model. Right now you are giving it, you are just, you know, inputting it. Eventually you should be able to learn the model. What models would be easier to learn? The atomic one or the higher order one, more expressive one? That's actually an interesting question. You should think carefully about it. It turns out that learning higher order sentences is easier because, you know, I'll make a hypothesis. Okay, I think for all XY, father XY means, you know, daughter YX. I can make a hypothesis, check with the data, as against having to do it at the atomic level. Okay? So higher level languages are easier also because learning becomes easier. That's another reason you actually eventually try keep doing it at a higher level. This is across the field. For example, in base net, relational base net is all the rage, which should not be surprising at all for you guys, because from a deterministic logic point of view, first order logic is even higher than relational logic. Okay, so that's a long introduction. I just want to make sure that you are in the same kind of a wavelength as I am as to why people care about higher level models. Okay, now having said that, what I'm going to do in today's class and also next class is to show you one example of trying to do, let's say, what you know already, which is state space search in atomic level. I'll show you how you could do it in factored model, that means state variable model. Okay, and then you get to see, as we are doing it, what are the advantages and maybe, you know, what are the opportunities that you can exploit, because you are writing, for example, you know, actions in a state variable format, states in a state variable format. And to give some of the things away, for example, I'll let you know that the actions that you would write for a domain would be much more compact if you wind up writing it in the factored form. Okay? And similarly, that means they can be easily learned, even if you are not there. And similarly, the search that you can do over those actions tends to be more flexible than what you can do in a star search. For example, one of the interesting things is, if I tell you, here are my, this is my initial state, here are 17 states, all of which are equally good goal states. Get to the fastest, get to the goal state, the, you know, with the optimal solution. Okay, with the optimal path. A star basically goes in the forward direction, right? Which goal is it supposed to go towards? Now, one idea would be to start with the goals themselves and go backwards, which would be nicer. Sometimes the branching factor is lower when you're coming back. Which of these 17 goals are you going to start from? So in almost, it looks as if to come backward, you should start 17 searches in the 17 of the goals and see whichever reaches the initial state first, and that is declared the winner. And we will talk in planning about an idea called regression search, which is doing backward search over factored action representations. And if you think about what it's doing, it's actually doing that in a very compact fashion. So things that you didn't even think were possible are possible because you're thinking in a factored model. Okay. Furthermore, in fact, I wouldn't do it in this class, but the textbook talks about it. One of the nice things, once you make actions, you know, direct objects and they're factored, that means they're given their descriptions in terms of the, what state variable values they need and what they will give, which is what we'll be talking about today. You don't need to start from the initial state to go to the goal state or start from the goal state to go to the initial state. How do you make plans in your life? You start throwing in actions. Okay, so for example, I have to go to, let's say, you know, some nice place for my vacation. So I'll start throwing in action. Okay, I need to buy a flight ticket. Okay, I need a hotel reservation. So that is the last thing I would need. I might do that before I buy the first flight ticket, because in that domain, if it's Hawaii in Christmas time, you better need, you need the hotel reservation before you even think about anything else. So you actually generate partial plans and you keep making them bigger in the middle, side, bottom, top, everywhere. That's what you do. I mean, I'm not presuming that I know how you think, but most of us think like this. And that's essentially searching in the space of plans directly. You're no longer thinking about states. You're thinking in terms of spaces of partially ordered action sequences. You can't even think about how to do that kind of a search if you're doing a star search in the space of atomic states. But it turns out it's very easy to do in the case of factored models. Okay, so I am basically going to talk about factored representation for planning and deterministic planning, and show some of these points. Okay, and one other big thing which I want to mention is, remember you talked about heuristics, right? A star search is all about heuristics. Where do heuristics come from? What?
At this point, us.
Yeah, that's kind of a very depressing thing, right? If it have to come from us, it's AI. And everything is supposed to be coming from us. So then some software engineering guy says, what you really need is software engineering. You know, you just write code properly, you don't need AI. Okay? Obviously, we hope that heuristics can be automatically generated. How do you generate heuristics automatically? What's the whole point of heuristics? What? That's a good point, but actually there's a more general idea, right? Heuristics are solutions in the relaxed space.
Yeah.
Right? You have a space, and then you somehow relax it, and you look for the solution in the relaxed space. The length in the relaxed space winds up being the lower bound for the overall thing. Now, if it is an atomic state, what are you going to relax? It's very hard to, there are not that many parameters you can relax. Whereas we will see, for example, that if actions are described in terms of preconditions, effects, right? And then I can say, well, I'll relax the requirement that I'll relax all the negative interactions. That means all actions get along well. It's one of these, you know, 70s commune kind of actions. They'll all get along well. So they never ever get into each other's way. So that means you ignore all the negative interactions, then you solve the problem. The length of that solution would be a bogus solution, because in real life people don't get along well, actions don't get along well, okay? But that length gives you a very good estimate of the actual length of solution in the real space. So the number of ways you can relax a problem will become more easily visible to you because you have a propositional or first order representation. Okay, so that's the other reason, and these 3 points at least you will see by the time I'm done by the Wednesday class. Okay, so deterministic planning is what I'm going to talk about. There's a bunch of applications for even deterministic planning technology. I won't go too much into it, but it's been used. Versions of deterministic planning and some stochastic planning were used on Spirit and Rover, which is the nicest thing. And in fact, one of the advantages is whenever you try to say I will automate stuff for people, they say, what if something goes wrong, and whose job is going to be, right? However, Spirit and Opportunity were thankfully 8 minutes away in terms of light communication. Speed of light, it takes 8 minutes at least, right? If they're about to fall into the ditch, they say, hey, I'm about to fall into the ditch, what am I supposed to do? And it'll take 8 minutes to come, and then if assuming that the JPL guy hasn't gone to get a burger or something, they would say, oh, stop, and then it'll go back in another 8 minutes, so in 16 minutes it's nicely in the ditch, right? So if you didn't care, if you believed in remote robotics, because all the high school robotics nonsense is remote robotics, right? You see all these kids with these robots with chainsaws and killing each other. That's what, all high school kids think robotics is all about. But they are actually killing each other because they have the remote control. And you don't need AI for that, right? And so, in fact, there's a point as to, do we need autonomous agents? And, if nobody else needs it, NASA needs it, for example, because there's a physical limitation. There's no way to get, help me, in faster than 8 minutes. And so, you have to think, okay? That's one, but also it's a nice thing. And then this one, for example, is a cute application where this is a fast Xerox printer, copier and printer. One of the interesting things here is in these modern day huge big Xerox machines, papers take very different paths, start from the same place, take very different paths and come to the end. And the papers may actually be printed, copied in the wrong order, but they better be collated in the right order. Otherwise, imagine, you just printed 1,000-page document, except that all the pages are, in the wrong order. Not even just a regular wrong order, just randomly wrong order. That's really bad. Okay, so what they're actually going to do, what they do in that particular case is there's a flexibility, which is if something goes wrong, let's say this roller isn't working, they can automatically change the path of some of the papers, such that they go through a different roller, but they make sure that they'll all come in the right order in the end. That's the goal. And they have used that. That's one example I can talk about. Web service and workflow composition, there's a lot of connections to planning. And military is always thinking that planning is very useful. Because they're bad at it. A bunch of other things. Okay, so various things that you can do with these kinds of technology, but it's an intro to AI class. I'm much more interested in you making sure that you understand why atomic and relational models could be useful, for example. Okay, that's it. So deterministic planning in the factored state, given an initial state and a goal state and a set of actions A1 to AN, find a sequence of actions that when applied from the initial state will take the agent to the goal state. Up to that point, it looks just like the search algorithm, I mean the requirement for the search. Why is this not a search problem? Because we have factored representations of states. That means the states are written in terms of state variables. Okay, and if there are n state variables, then that you can write 2 power n states if they are Boolean state variables. Okay, and then furthermore, actions are written in terms of the state variables too. And so you can talk of them in terms of preconditions and effects, and the preconditions would be action requires certain state variables to have certain values before it can be done. And the effects is it changes certain state variables values to something else. That's how it changes a state. Okay? And so this internal structure of the actions in the state can be used to formulate better search, better heuristics. That's what we're going to understand. Okay. Here is the one slide that's sort of a detailed slide that you should understand. By the way, 3:30 I started, right? So I'm done at 4:45. Okay, fine. Bloch's world. This is the fruit fly of planning research. And it's a very simple world, and we'll make all our points with respect to this. You should be able to write a domain, you know, some other domain, you know, in this same way. But the idea of a Bloch's world is there is a table. There's a bunch of named blocks in some configuration in the beginning, and the goal is there is some particular goal configuration that needs to be satisfied. You need to reach that. The goal configuration doesn't have to be defined completely. I might just say I want A to be on top of B. That means any state where A is on top of B is fine with me. Okay? Initial state, does it have to be defined completely or not?
Not really. We don't care
about
A and B. We don't care
about
C.
Whatever is in your state, you're supposed to give. You know, basically, the idea is deterministic planning is being done. One of the assumptions we made here is it's a fully observable world. That means you should know what everything's value is. You may not want to use it. Just because you know it, you shouldn't be using it. You know, if you just because you know the values of many other blocks and you get all tangled up with them, you're doing bad search. But I shouldn't, just because you might do bad search, I shouldn't withdraw information from you. Okay? An initial state has to be complete because we essentially said it's a fully observable world. Okay? So here is an interesting, as we start, so a problem in this blocks world, so I have A and B, it's just two blocks. And I have a hand which can be used, a robotic hand, which can be used to pick a block. And it can only pick a block, there are two different actions. One is pick up, which will only work if the block is on the table, and another action called unstack, which will work if the block is on top of another block. Presumably, the idea is if it's on the table, you can just pick it up like this. If it's on another block, you should be very careful because it could be on top of a very large stack and you need to very gingerly remove it. Okay, so I differentiate those two, pick up and unstack. And in my world, in the world that I'm going to talk to you about today, two blocks, just two blocks, A and B. That's all. Okay, so and their initial state is defined in terms of basically a bunch of relations. On those blocks. So on table is a relation. On table is true for A. On table is true for B. A clear is another relation. That's true for A. Clear is true for B. Hand empty is true in the initial state. Okay. In the goal state, for whatever reason, all I care about is B should not be clear and hand should be empty. B should not be clear and hand should be empty. First of all, just let's make sure we are on the same page. Can you guys solve this problem? It's late in the day and I didn't ask you directly, but hopefully you know that there is a way of solving this problem. You know, it's an indirect, I'm giving indirect constraints on the goal state. B should not be clear means somebody should be on top of it. So in this particular case, A should be on top of B because that's the only other guy. Okay, and hand should be clear. So after you put A on top of B, you take your hand off. That's the solution.
So clear means
Yeah, so clear essentially, I mean, the semantics come from the rest of the description. Right now I'm hoping from the English you understood, but clear essentially means there's nothing on top of the block. On table means it's on top of the table. On AB means A is on top of B. Which one? I have to make sure what I wrote. It all depends on what I said here. So stack XY will give you on XY, and to do that, it requires Y to be clear. And it should be holding X. So it's holding X and putting it top of Y. That's why on XY means X is on top of Y.
Okay.
So that, again, this is another thing. Where does meaning come from? No. Meaning comes from constraints between objects. Okay? There is no, you know, ultimately, the reason my on XY is the correct thing and yours isn't is because I decided to write the action this way. That's why. Okay? And in fact, you know this, in logic, essentially, what is, you know, logic isn't like a magic bullet. All it's doing is it's putting a constraints on the set of models that are consistent with your world. And if that's not, if there is one model that's being sneaked in and you don't like it, you put an extra constraint to stop the bad guy from coming in. Okay, meaning comes from propositional constraints. That's what meaning comes from. Okay, what about Sudoku, right? Where does Sudoku's solutions have meaning? Because of the constraints. If it's just a bunch of putting numbers on the Sudoku, you know, even I can do it. Right, you don't need a PhD. Right? Even if you have a PhD, you can do it, for example. But there are constraints, and you don't get to put numbers any which way. You know, you have to make sure that the constraints are not violated. Okay, fine. So that's the thing for the initial state. That's the goal state. We know that there is a solution for it. And then there are the state variables, which are on table X, on XY, clear X, hand empty, and holding X. Those are the state variables. Now, you can think of these at the relational level, because that's how I wrote it. Or you can think in terms of propositional level, where on A, on table A becomes on table dash A. It's just a propositional symbol. And you know that if you compile relational to propositional, you lose some of the structure. But the advantage is you get to use the propositional logic theorem provers to deal with relational logic. Right? You don't need to do unification. If you hate unification, the thing you do when you're given relational logic statements is to convert them into propositional logic, compile it down. Okay? So here I will provide the description in the relational way, but mostly I'll use it in the propositional way. Okay? So those are the initial state, and that's your state variables. In the initial state has to be a complete specification of truth, falsity values to all the state variables. Okay? That's what that one is. Since this is complete, and if I ask you, is on table D true? Is on table D true? Is on table D true? D. Or on table K true?
Oh, undefined.
Not undefined. It's not true.
Oh.
If I didn't say it, it's not true. Yeah. Right? This is the entire, you know, the world. Okay? And then goals, on the other hand, are a partial specification on the state that you are interested in. Okay, now here's the interesting thing. If I said initial state is a partial specification, would you be happy or unhappy? If I say goal state is a partial specification, would you be happy or unhappy? Do you understand what I'm saying? There is an asymmetry. Initial state, I'm saying, must be complete. It sort of makes sense because it's a fully observable world, and so initial state should be complete. But if I say initial state is partially specified, that means the world is a bad world. I can't observe it. That's why it's partially specified. I don't quite know where A is. It's hanging around somewhere. But I pretty much know where B is. So if initial state is partially specified, your life becomes harder. If goal state is partially specified, would your life become normally harder or easier? Normally. Sort of like partial satisfaction point. At least you're not making the same mistake again. It's a good point. So the idea is, I don't know which one you made. Maybe he made it. I'm sorry. It's okay. It's okay. Good. Notice that I won't be deciding your grade. So whatever I say about you doesn't matter. It's So enjoy the life. Okay. So although I can send emails to Juan Lu. But so the point is that So if the goal state is partially specified, that means if a state of the world is defined in terms of 10,000 state variables. Okay? Like imagine, I mean, you're trying to tell, you know, harmony, e-harmony, or e-give me a girlfriend, e-give me a boyfriend. What are you looking for in your girlfriend, boyfriend? Right? If you start writing 10,000 pages, right, even e-harmony might say, well, look in Mars. And there is probably a better chance there. That means you're being way too picky. You're asking for too many things to be true. The best way is somebody living would get you, right? Very low expectations. You know, anybody living, I'm happy with, okay? Dead, I'm slightly worried. Okay, so the point I'm trying to say is partial specification is a good thing. E-harmony would be able to solve the problem right away. And see, here is, you know, entire continent of people of opposite sex or apposite sex, whichever you want. You know, by the way, this is something that if you take GRE, you would know OPPO and APPO, SITE are two completely different words. Apposite is appropriate sex. So I am completely equal opportunity, so it doesn't matter whichever you want. So you could use a lower number of constraints, it's easier to solve the problem. In general, so partial specification of goal is a good thing. Partial specification of initiative is a bad thing. But every good thing can be held against you. Sometimes what I can do is I can say, look, you know, come in, this is very easy to solve problem. All you need to do is this, and I'll give you one constraint, and the problem, overall problem is so tightly constrained that there's only one state in the world that will satisfy that problem. Then you will find it, you know, you jumped into the problem and only found it much later. But generally we assume partial specification is good because many goal states can be satisfying the goal condition. Okay. Then the actions. Pick up X, and the definition of actions is they have preconditions and effects. You can think of them as formulas, but you can also think of them as state variables and their valuations. And a precondition for pick up X tells you that the hand empty state variable must be true. Okay? Clear X state variable must be true. On table X state variable must be true. If it is true, if those all are satisfied, then you can do pick up X. In which case, it would then take whatever state you are in and change that state by making holding X true. If it was false, it will be made true. If it is true, it will stay true. Okay? On table X, it will make it false. Okay? Hand empty, it will make it false. Clear X, it will make it false. So it doctors the state because state has an inside. One of the problems of not being atomic is people can do surgery on you. Right? If you are atomic human beings, then doctors can't do surgery. If you are bad, you just send you back. Okay? If you have structure, then we can do surgery, remove various parts, put other parts. And states have structure, so I can do surgery. Okay? So the effects do surgery on the states, modify the variables whose values have been given. Okay, that's basically the forced actions. Okay? Now the advantage of this is if I give you a completely specified state, you can tell me what would be the new state that will happen when you apply this action. First you check if the action is applicable. If the precondition formula is satisfied, it's applicable. If so, then there would be a single state that will come out. Not two, not five, just one. If it's not applicable, no states come out. That means that state dies, the original state dies after this action. This is all deterministic. We are doing deterministic right now. Okay? So those are your four actions. So now, in fact, in this particular case, it turns out that the preconditions are all thinking in terms of positive values, but that's not required. All you really care is you tell me what state variables should have what values, and you tell me what state variables you will change to have what values. By the way, in this class, we'll look at Boolean state variables because they're connected to propositional logic. But this representation can be easily generalized to multi-valued state variables. Not too much change. And in fact, sometimes it's a useful thing to do. Okay. Now, there is some sort of a language, you know, in the planning community for specifying actions. It looks, you know, suspiciously like Lisp because we are AI dweebs. And it's basically, so it's action pickup, parameters, precondition, effect. So you can write this. And there are planners which will eat this kind of action representation, these kinds of initial goal state specifications, and spit out sequences of actions, which when applied to the initial state, get you to the goal state. Okay, so that's the, now the question what we are trying to do is, you know, how do they do it? Okay, I will actually, since I spent a lot of time on the state variable models, I will skip these two slides. It turns out that having just described state variable representation, I can talk about glass is half full and glass is half empty with respect to this representation. How good it is compared to atomic representation, and then how bad it is compared to first order representation that you could have. Okay, you'll never be unhappy, okay? But I will leave those, I'll let you read it, and you know, if we might talk about it next class. I want to give you at least a couple of detailed ideas about how to do search with this. So what I'd like to do is tell you how to do progression and regression. In fact, if I have, you know, actions in this kind of representation, what can I do? If I have, you know, C program, one idea is compile the thing down to assembly, and then it's just assembly. So I can compile the actions down into an atomic state transition function and use A star search. And whatever I tell you here better be faster than that, otherwise I wasted your time. Right? So since you know how to do this, I won't bother about it. The other I'll tell you, which is how to directly use the actions in this factored form. Okay. Two ideas, one go forward, the other is go backward. Go forward is easy. And then just as the class is ending, I'll mess with your brain and talk about going backward. Okay? So going forward, very simple, right? You know, if this is my completely specified state, okay? By the way, why is it that in this state there is nothing that is negative? Sanity check.
That was
the initial state. Yeah? Why can't things be negative in the initial state? Nobody is dead is a good thing in the initial state. No, the point is, since this state is completely specified, so I can always take a shortcut and just show only the things that are positive, everything else is negative.
Oh, okay.
Or vice versa. You can only do this, it's just a convention. But, you know, I mean, once you leave this class, you would be wondering, you know, maybe Rao just told me something about only positive worlds. You know, you can do negative worlds too. Really, all you're doing here is, you know, you are, since it's completely specified, you just by convention list only the positive ones and ignore the negative ones. Okay? Fine. So then this is the completely specified initial state and do pickup A. If I do pickup A, remember if you want to do search on this, I should be able to apply an action to a state to get a new state. Right? So here are my actions. Previously to do this in your A star search, you would give you give the current state, which is a data structure, to a child generator function, which is opaque to you, and then that will do blah, blah, blah stuff and send you a list back, which just happens to have children in it. And only the child generator knows what the heck is going on. Now you too can know what exactly is happening because your action is specified in a particular language. So whether or not pickup A is applicable depends on whether the state variables are satisfied. So pickup A would be working in that state if AND is empty, A is clear, and A is on table. Okay? AND empty, clear A, on table A. Direct search, direct check. Because of which, pickup A will then, I'm sorry, I should have put the model back again here. I'm going back. So if these are true, then in the new state, what pickup A does is it copies over the old state and modifies just these variables such that they have those values. So it will make sure that holding X, so holding A will become true, on table A will become false, hand empty will become false, and clear A will become false. And when you're holding something, you assume that it's not clear. Okay? That's what it did. So I applied pickup A, holding A, not clear A, not on table A, on table B, clear B, not hand empty. By the way, here's my interesting question. This is complete state. Is this a complete state?
Yes.
Why?
Everything.
What? Because it's a deterministic action. If it was a non-deterministic action, then you will get a bunch of states. And if you try to combine them, you will get a partial state. In fact, a partial state is nothing but multiple states, multiple complete states. In fact, a logical formula is nothing but the set of all models that satisfy it. Right? Okay, so that's one state. This is a complete state. If I do pick up B, I'll get another complete state. Okay? And what's my termination condition? What's my termination condition? My termination condition is there is a goal state I provided. This formula must be satisfied in my current state. Clear B should be false and hand empty should be true. Okay? Clear B, true, unfortunately, no good. Clear B is false. Hand empty is false too, no good. You're not done yet. So you apply actions from these and go forward still. Until you get a state where clear B is false and hand empty is true. And how do you do search? Use your favorite search algorithm. You can do ASR, you can do IDDFS, you can do BFS, you can do DFS, you can do hill climbing, you can do any of these. In fact, what we'll talk about next class is how these search algorithms can actually do likely better. You know, because you will provide heuristics for them based on the action representation yourself. They don't need somebody else to provide them. You meaning the program can derive the heuristics directly. That's what it is. You know, when we are talking about AI, you know, if I keep giving it to my program, then it's just me. And I know that, I mean, I don't know whether you guys knew about this. I think Goddard is the father of, you know, I think rocketry in America. And then he was actually a Nazi war criminal, but that's a different story. He was very nice to us. And one of the interesting things he said was the easiest mass-producible way to generate intelligent agents is to have children. Okay. And so you already learned that in junior high, I assume. Okay. So what we are talking about when we say you do it, it's not you the person, you your program. That's what we are interested in. Okay. If, you know, if I did it automatically, that means the program should do it. Okay, so generic progression planner, you have a goal test, and you have a child generator I showed you, and you can use any of the search algorithms that you already learned. You don't know whether they'll be any faster yet. I'll tell you next class that they are in fact faster and much faster. That's why we still have a field called planning. Search starts from the initial state until it finds the state that, you know, has the termination criterion satisfied. It's done. That's forward. Okay, backward. One of the things that I can do here is I can start from the goal state and go towards initial state. Of course, you could do this in the atomic states too. However, one of the interesting things is, remember that the goal state is partially specified, which actually means that whatever I'm telling you here, it's actually happening in the atomic state. So in fact, one of the interesting things is, as you see this state space, okay, suppose I actually compiled the states down. I mean, I ignored the structure, compiled them down. So this will become S0, this will be S15, this will be S19. So you are thinking, wow, I'm doing very beautiful search in the higher level space. And your friend, the atomic guy, is thinking, oh, what the heck is he doing? Is he just going from S0 to S15, S75? It's almost directly mirroring. You know, there is a search tree below, there is a search tree above. That one is written in terms of state names, this one is written in terms of the contents of the state. No big difference. Turns out you can do this search faster, but, you know, the search tree itself is not particularly different. When you come here, on the other hand, if I have a partial description of the goal state, it actually means that there could be a set of goals, set of atomic states that are consistent with it. The problem with saying there are a set of things is a set can also be empty. That's a different story. We would not, you know, we'd hope that it's a set, hopefully more than a singleton. Now, if I'm doing a single search from that state, partially specified state, towards this, as I'll be explaining in a minute to you, then the atomic guy will essentially be doing k parallel searches, effectively, starting from the k of the goal states and doing search on each of them until they reach the initial state. When you understand this, you understood something cool, even though it doesn't look particularly hard when you look at it this level. Okay? Now, it turns out it's easy to understand. It's not that hard. All I'm saying is, if I want to go backward, okay, let me make this little bigger. let me make this a little bigger so that you can see it. Okay. So now you can see the action descriptions I have it in front of you. Okay. So I started with my remember my goal state was this, right? Not clear B and hand empty. So I just threw that in as my goal state. I'm going to do backward search. So whatever is, so basically this is the last action in the plan. If this is the last thing I do and I want to declare victory after that, what must I have done before this? This is the kind of thing George Bush must have thought about before going on to the, you know, Navy craft, right? If I want to declare victory, before that what should I do? Actually achieve the victory. Right? So this guy is going to say, put down A, I'm done. It better be the case, first of all, since you're doing this, it better be the case that it is doing something useful for the goal. Right? That means put down A is giving one of the things that you want. Is put down A giving anything that you want?
Hand empty.
Hand empty. So it's worth doing it as the last action from the usefulness point of view. Okay, the other thing of course is, if this guy gives hand empty and this is the last action, who is going to give not clear B? Somebody before him or her, right? So this not clear B should be true here. However, one thing that this guy shouldn't do is kill not clear B. It's bad enough if you don't, you know, this is like, you know, medicine, right? You know, first do no harm. Okay, if you are giving hand empty, so you are useful, you don't want to give not clear B, so I'll get somebody else to give me not clear B, but at least don't kill not clear B. If you kill not clear B, that means you have an effect called, to kill not clear B, what must you have as an effect?
Dead B.
Clear B, not dead B, I'm sorry. If this guy has an effect clear B, that would be inconsistent with not clear B. So that means it sort of killed it. Do you see what I'm saying? Yes, sir.
Is it possible that solution change includes events that do something negative, but they have other side effects that are positive?
They have to be, what, yes, but what, at the state where they are the last state. So what's interesting is I put this action, I get a new state, and I'm recursing from there. Okay, so these guys will only have to give something that here that's useful. And by the time you sub-goal, you would be working on sub-goals that may not look at all like anything at the top level. That's how we work. And one of the interesting search things that can happen is you can, to solve A and B, you sub-goal, and 2 days later you're trying to solve A, B, and C. Then you should wake up and say, what the heck am I doing? I'm supposed to just only make A and B true, and I simplified it to making A, B, and C true. That's not simplification. That can happen if you, you know, in the search, because you know search doesn't may not have a good heuristic. Okay? Yes.
In the situation where we think that the state that we got to, not clear being holding A is an impossible state.
Which one? The.
So if we were to perform for that.
This one.
Right.
This one.
State to achieve considering our initial
condition. That was going to be my next question, and I was hoping that enough people here are asleep that they won't know the answer, but you are awake and you know the answer. Okay. So here's my the question. What's your name, by the way? Roy. So what Roy is asking is, okay, so you did put down, you got a state. Now I can expand this state, and I can expand this state. His question is this really a state? This is supposed to be a set of legal states, but the set can be empty. In this world, I mean, the guy obviously played with blocks when he was a kid. In this world, it turns out, in this world, it turns out that you can't have not clear B and holding A true. And you can't figure this out at the end of the class when you have slept through the most of it. Okay? It requires some thought for you, which means it also requires some thought for your program. In general, this is a logical formula. You want to see whether that logical formula is inconsistent given the domain theory. In the worst case, the complexity of saying that this logical formula is inconsistent is the complexity of planning. in the worst case. You guys know the worst case, right? So in the worst case, showing that something can't be achieved can only be done by exhausting all ways of achieving it and finding, I can't achieve anything. Okay? Here, it so happened that you are able to find a simple proof that it's dead. And when you do find a proof that it is dead, by God, you use it. You kill this state. Because the way search worsens is dead guys get dead children, who get dead grandchildren, who get dead grandchildren, and it's like, you know, Halloween movie all over. The entire search tree is dead states, and you're thinking, man, I'm making great progress. Okay? But you are making no progress whatsoever. Okay, that's a, can this thing happen when you're going in the forward direction? No. So, in fact, this is a bad thing for regression. I made all sorts of good things about regression. Wow, it's a much nicer idea. It's doing this multi-state search in the bottom while you're doing this. But then you give up something, which is there could be dead states sitting there. I call them states, really, but they're sets. This is a logical formula which corresponds to a set of states. But if the logical formula is inconsistent, it corresponds to an empty set of states. Now I can say, just prune all the logical formulas that correspond to empty sets of states, and if you do that very eagerly, then you would do worse search than your friend who ignores. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so one of the interesting things is, if you are not Roy and you didn't realize that this is a dead state, and you just kept expanding it, but you used A-star search, with an admissible heuristic. The advantage of admissible heuristic is that no branch goes to infinite depth when there is a finite depth solution. And you can get, anybody can get admissible heuristics. H equal to 0 is an admissible heuristic. So if you do breadth first search, you don't need Roy's intelligence. You basically will be able to find the solution. Roy's hope is that you would be doing much more search than him, because he at least is cutting these things. That's true if he's clever. And so, in fact, one of the problems is when you're trying to solve a search problem, right, if a boss gives you a problem to solve, okay, you either try to solve it or try to prove that it can't be done. And then you convert this problem into two other problems. You either solve them or try to prove that it can't be done. Now, if you go crazy over trying to prove it can't be done, as like my son, you know, middle school, you know, kid does, everything can't be done. You know, that can essentially slow down the search completely. Okay, because just proving that something cannot be done, if you're making that the foregrounded thing, then all your CPU cycles are going into killing the dead guys. And all you need is one alive guy who goes to the solution. So, again, just like everything else in search, it's a matter of trade-offs. You should use some of the pruning, in particular, any easy pruning check. If you know, use it. Just because something in the worst case is as bad as planning doesn't mean it's always as bad as planning. For example, if I have a state which says not clear B and clear B, you don't need to be awake to even realize that it's a dead state. How can you have both clear B and not clear B? It's dead on arrival. Unfortunately, we won't even generate those states, right? Because, why? Because I won't allow regression over put down A if it does clear B, which is actually, again, it's not clear B. So the easy things, I can do it too. Thank you. You don't need to do it. The hard things can be so hard that in trying to prove that they are dead, you might waste your time. That can be well spent in solving the problem. Okay? By the way, so in fact, you know, normally realizing that this state is dead is not obvious at all. Okay? So here is put down A, this state, if you realize it, it's dead, and then stack AB gives me this state. Put down B, you can try to figure out what it will give as the state. You can fact and realize whether it will be useful and whether it doesn't do any harm, in which case you can compute the regression state. The final question is, when do you get done and go home? I mean, it's time to go home, so when would you be done in this search?
When you get to the start state.
How? How do you check that? Start state might have 10,000 variables and their valuations. If you say, when I get to the start state, you better be careful, because I'm only interested in two of the variables. Right? So all you are really saying is, if what I am trying to satisfy is already true in the start state, it doesn't matter how much more is true in the start state. if holding A and clear B are true in the start state, I'm done right now. That's the termination criteria. Okay, that's the termination criterion. Is this any different from the termination criterion for the projection? No. In fact, in projection 2, you have a much bigger state. The whole thing doesn't have to be the goal state. It's just that whatever has the goal state must be true here. That's it. So it's actually the same exact termination state, termination condition. Okay? Where basically here, this is the start state, this is the goal state. Here, these are sort of the representatives of the goal state, and the start state is sitting around doing nothing. And this is regression. Okay, two questions before you leave. One is, if I can do, so put down, these actions can be done, I said there are two requirements, right? In fact, there is a, this describes what I just said as the requirements for doing regression for the action. In particular, a state S can be regressed over an action A if and only if there is no variable V in this state such that V is given different values by the effects of A and the state itself. Because this is the last action, and if this guy doesn't agree with one of the values here, there is no more repair left. You're dead. Right? And furthermore, there is at least one variable V dash such that V dash is given the same value by the effects of A as well as the partial specification. This is do no harm, this is do something useful. If you must give up one of them, which would you give up? And what would happen? What? If you give up do something useful, then what happens? So, the question is, what's your answer? So if I have to, I'm a lazy programmer, I don't want to code both of these. I want to just code one of these constraints and not code one of the ones. Which one would I ignore and still be reasonable planner? What would you rather have your doctor do? Do no harm or make you healthy? First, if only one of them they're going to do.
Do no harm.
Right? Because if at least that guy leaves you alone, you can go to another quack doctor. If you're dead there, then there's no hope. Right? So if you kill this, then you would be happily giving sequences of actions saying, yeah, that's a plan, and it's not a plan. And that's the worst thing a computer scientist can do. Give a solution with a big grin and saying this is a solution, and people laugh at them because it's not a solution. It's incorrect. The second worst thing is saying here is an optimal solution, and they show you one more solution which is shorter than that. But that's second worst thing. The first worst thing is giving incorrect solution. Why? Because correctness is a local property, and every bozo should be able to tell whether or not something is correct. Optimality, on the other hand, is a global property. So you can be a reasonably clever person, but not particularly Einstein quality, and didn't realize that there is a better solution somewhere else, or you didn't have an admissible heuristic. Okay? So you should never cut this. You can cut this, in which case you get non-minimal plans. You will have actions which do nothing useful. But the plan, if it reaches the goal state, which reaches the termination, then it will be a correct plan. If you run the plan, you will reach a goal state where all the goals are satisfied. Check this for yourself. The second question, and I won't ask you to answer this, is which do you think is better? Think about this, and we'll talk about it on Wednesday. Which search is better, regression or progression? If I don't have heuristics, heuristic is h equal to 0. Which would you rather do, regression search or progression search? Try to formulate some thoughts about it. We'll talk about it. And then next class, when we come back, we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how to make heuristics, which will change the answer once again. Okay. In fact, it turns out that the question of which is better, progression or regression, is a never-ending battle. That's why it's worth thinking about. Okay.